Part 7. Cork. Chapter 15. In the late afternoon, snow begins to fall. The flakes are large and float down, and they melt as soon as they hit the ground. Kills any chance for a search plane, Cork notes, looking at the low, heavy clouds.
Let's hope it stops soon, Morisot says. Otherwise, it becomes a hunter snow.
Cork shakes his head. Even Henry will be in trouble then. A hunter snow. Game's worst enemy. Cork thinks of the number of times a hunter snow has helped him track and bring down deer.
It'll make it easier for us to follow these guys, Morisot says.
It's already easy, Cork says.
I'm figuring they were half a day ahead when we started. If we hurry, we might catch them by nightfall.
They follow where the others have gone before them. The snow begins to come down more heavily and stick to the branches of the trees, and then begins to cover the ground. It's becoming the hunter snow they feared. The men they're tracking are far enough ahead. The Cork knows it will be some time before their prints become visible in the snow. He has no idea how far ahead of those bastards Rainey and the others might be. He hopes far enough to find shelter and hide before the tracks they might themselves leave in the snow give away their location. The snowfall intensifies and a wind rises, and it's as if they've stepped into the swirl inside a snow globe. Then the first shot comes. A rifle report like the crack of thunder from somewhere up ahead. Cork and Morisot, both veterans of law enforcement, drop and take cover.
Are you hit?
Cork calls. He's rolled behind the cover of a fallen pine.
Good here,
Morisot says. He's found a gray rock outcrop that gives him good protection.
Did you see where it came from?
Cork calls.
Hard to tell in this damn snow, Morisot says, but I'd say somewhere above.
Cork crawls to the end of the fallen pine and risks a peek. The swirling snow makes a good blind for whoever has fired on them. The flip side is that it helps to hide Cork and Morisot as well. He figures whoever the shooter is, he must have spotted their dim images approaching in the snowfall and fired too soon. Not a true hunter. A bit more patience, and he might have had a clear shot. In the wake of the rifle shot, the only sound in the woods is the rush of the wind through the tree branches. Cork and Morisot remain unmoving, listening for anything that might give them a better idea of the shooter's location. Nothing comes. Cork slides the rifle strap from his shoulder, slowly brings the rifle around and sights through the scope. 50 yards ahead is a slope topped by a rock outcropping. Although he can't see the shooter, it seems to him the most logical position. He signals to Morisot, who is 30 feet to his right, to circle in that direction. Morisot gives him a thumbs up and begins maneuvering carefully under the cover of the trees. Cork stays low. Although the snow is falling heavily and will help to mask him, he moves with extreme caution from one form of cover to the next. Fallen log to pine tree to spruce, spruce to brush blind, circling gradually and widely. A rifle shot brings him to a sudden halt. It has come not from ahead where Cork believes the shooter to be, but from where Morisot is circling. He wonders if Morisot has spotted their target, or if he's simply trying to draw the shooter's attention. Cold flakes slap Cork's face, melt immediately, and drip into his eyes. With the back of his hand, he wipes away the melt. Another shot, this one from the outcrop atop the slope. He uses his scope, but still can't see any movement there. He continues to circle until he's 50 yards from the outcrop and slightly behind it. He can see a figure now, dressed in hunter's camo, wedged into a cleft at the top of the outcrop. He can see the rifle snugged against the figure's shoulder. The shooter appears to be intent on aiming. Cork has a clear shot, but refrains from taking it. He wants this man alive. He wants answers. He moves quickly now, but carefully still, until he's 20 yards away and with an easy shot at the figure's back. He slips behind the broad trunk of an ancient cedar, kneels, sights, and calls out, "Drop your rifle!" The figure doesn't move.
"I said drop it!"
The figure sets the rifle down among the rocks.
"Hands clasped behind your head and stand up."
The man complies. He's powerfully built with a narrow face and a nose like an axe sunk between his eyes. Early 40s, Cork guesses.
"Who are you?"
The man stares, a blank look focused on the swirling snow somewhere behind Cork.
"I've got him," Cork shouts.
A few moments later, Morisot appears. The man doesn't look at either of them. His eyes remain fixed on the distance.
3 steps away from the rifle," Morisot says.
The man takes 3 limping steps forward.
"Who are you?" Cork asks.
He's like a figure cut from ice, unmoving, his cold eyes holding on something far away, something only he can see.
"Where are the others?" Morisot demands.
Cork can see that the leather of the man's boot is soaked with blood.
"There was blood back there on the trail. Yours?"
When he gets no reply, he rams the butt of his rifle into the man's stomach. The man doubles over, collapses, struggles to breathe. Cork stands over him.
"Whose blood?"
The man slowly gathers himself and says nothing. Cork slams his boot into the man's ribs. The man absorbs the blow, his face clenched in pain, but he holds to silence.
"We're getting nowhere this way," Morisot says. "Maybe we should torture him a little."
Cork kneels down and puts his face near the man's ear.
"My friend is Ojibwe," he says.
"Do you know what that word means?"
"It means to pucker,
which is what happens to a man when he's burned alive." The man replies, finally looking Cork in the eye.
"If you want the women alive, you need to move now. Me, I'm going nowhere with this foot."
Cork has seen hard men before, and he knows that to break this man would take a good deal of time. Morisot understands this too.
"I hate to say it, but he's right. We got to keep moving or we'll lose them in the snow."
"What do we do with him?"
Cork asks.
"I say we tie him to a tree and leave him. We can come back for him after we find Dolores and the others."
"Let's take that knife from his belt, check to see if he has anything else on him, maybe some ID, Cork says. They frisk him, but find nothing that will tell them who the man is. Morisot pulls out a pair of flex cuffs from his gear. In response to Cork's look of surprise, he says,
"I bring them everywhere. You never know."
They take the man's belt, the laces from his boots, seat him on the ground with his back to the trunk of a birch, and use the plastic restraint to secure his hands behind him to the tree. Cork picks up the rifle the man has dropped.
"Savage M10 Stealth. It's fitted with a loopholed VX2 scope. Expensive."
"We can't leave it," Morisot says.
"At least not in this condition."
Cork scrapes mud from the snow-wetted ground and stuffs the barrel. Then he takes a rock and smashes the scope.
"Should you somehow get free, that piece will be no good to you now."
Just before they leave, the man says,
"Any wolves in these parts?"
"Oh, yeah,"
Cork replies. "Several packs."
"Know anything about wolves?"
The man looks up at him. Snow is melting on his face, running like tears down the sides of his nose.
"They're meat eaters.
They can smell blood for miles."
"If you're lucky," Morisot says, "maybe we'll be back before the wolves find you."
They turn and begin again in the direction they were following before the attack. A thin blanket of wet snow covers everything, obscuring any tracks on the ground. But the men have left other signs. Crushed vegetation, broken branches. For a while, Cork and Morisot are able to proceed. But the snowfall finally grows too heavy, and the wind grows too strong, and the storm becomes another enemy in their fight to find the ones they love. Because of the thick cloud cover, darkness comes early.
As eager as he is in this hunt, Cork knows that if they go on, they risk losing any sense of the trail and maybe any hope. It's a hard decision, but he knows they have no choice. "Over there," he says, pointing to an alcove among boulders at the bottom of a rocky slope. They hunker in the shelter of the boulders, in the lee of the wind. They don't talk. They sit, sunk in their own thoughts. "The guy we left behind," Morisot says. "Think you'll be okay in this?"
"He'll suffer, but he'll survive,"
Cork says.
"It's those still in front of us I'm worried about."
They both peer into the confusion of swirling snow.
"We've done everything we can for the moment,"
Cork says, fighting a blanket of discouragement as wet and heavy as anything the storm promises to deliver.
"Now it's up to Henry."